Well, next year, but again, I don't know if people have already gotten those copies. Copies are or were available, but look for that here as a membership premium at that number, 877-500-5266. But we got to get out of here. We have only a few seconds left. Thank you so much, Jackie. Sure. Once again, really appreciate it.
At the Clinton is our monthly film series that takes place every third Thursday at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the film is Chico and Rita, showing Thursday, September 15th at 6:30 p.m. Melao de Cuba, a Latin salsa band, will play, and the film will start at 7:15. Chico and Rita is a 2010 adult animated music and romantic film set in the late 1940s and early 1950s. Chico is a young piano player with big dreams. Rita is a beautiful singer with an extraordinary voice. Music and romantic desire unite them, but their journey and the tradition of the Latin ballet, the boleto, brings heartache and torment. Again, that's Chico and Rita, showing Thursday, September 15th at 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. And here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, it's Political Perspectives. Today, the guest is Clara Bingham, author of Witness to the Revolution, Radicals, Resistors, Vets, Hippies, and the Year America Lost Its Mind and Found Its Soul. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, and then at 10:15 on Flashpoints, Native activist Tom Goldtooth on the Dakota access struggle. And we air excerpts of the documentary film by Greg Palast, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. 11 o'clock on The Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen talks about storing apples and pears and also talks about planting cover crops. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO today, and we go right to Political Perspectives.
John is in the basement mixing up the medicine. I'm on the pavement looking about the government. A man in a trench coat badge out laid off says he's got a bad bill, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alley.
Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. With me by phone is Clara Bingham, author of Witness to the Revolution. As Tammy just said, Radicals, Resistors, Vets, Hippies, and the Year America Lost Its Mind and Found Its Soul. Clara Bingham is also the author of Class Action, the landmark case that changed sexual harassment law, and Women on the Hill, Challenging the Culture of Congress. She's a former Newsweek White House correspondent, and her writing has appeared in numerous publications. And in 2011, she produced the documentary The Last Mountain. Clara Bingham, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks for having me, Kathleen.
Thank you. Witness to the Revolution, which came out earlier this year, is basically an oral history of the time period from, I think, August 1969 to August 1970. And it features the words of activists, organizers, and radicals, the famous and the not so famous, who were part of that time. It is an eyewitness account from these people, and it includes different viewpoints from a lot of different people, including activists like Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn and Robin Morgan and Daniel Ellsberg and Oliver Stone. We heard Oliver Stone today on Democracy Now! And others that did not become so well known for their actions or work. The book is a fascinating read, and it's incredibly interesting to hear the personal experiences of these interviewees and remember what was happening from these different points of view. Clara Bingham, how did you come? You did not come of age in the 60s.
I was born in 1963, and so, as I say in the book, I missed it.
Right.
Which is one of my motivations for wanting to write this book. I grew up on the Upper West Side in New York City, and my playground, Central Park, was the staging ground for the movement all during my early childhood years. And the movement and the 60s and all of the different rebellions that took place then were the wallpaper of my childhood. Yet when I graduated from college in 1985, all of that had ended, and just 15 years earlier, the largest student strike in America had taken place after Kent State. But I was in you know, the middle of the Reagan, graduated from college in the middle of the Reagan era, and was very aware of the fact that my choices and the opportunities that I had in life were really completely wide open and different than they would have been 20 years earlier because of all the different rebellions and revolutions that took place just, you know, 10 to 15 years earlier. So I've always been very, very curious about this time and felt like it was also a very good time to go back and talk to activists who are now in their 70s about how the 60s changed their lives and how they, as players in different parts of the movement, changed history.
The year that you chose, why was it so important? Why did you choose to focus on that particular time span and maybe go over again what that time span was?
So I focused on the school year of 1969-70 because I feel as if years, especially then when schools, protests were always organized around the school year. Because that's when students were all together and were easy to organize. And so that was more of a real year, in a way, than the calendar year. But I focused on that school year because I saw it as that moment as in time as the crescendo of the 60s. It was one of the most violent years in the decade, and it is also relatively underdocumented. There are many books and movies about 1968, which, of course, was this cataclysmic year when RFK and Martin Luther King were assassinated, and there were so, you know, riots erupting everywhere. But by 69-70, we had I consider, perfect storm of three different movements that had been percolating over the course of the 60s, the civil rights, Black Power movement, the counterculture, and the anti-war movement. And by those last 2 years in the 60s, these three movements who really joined forces and created a, you know, absolutely massive change in consciousness in the country. And at one point, the Scranton Commission, which Nixon hired to analyze the student protests and strikes after the Kent State in May of 70, announced that the country was in a crisis as deep as the Civil War and that it threatened the survival of our nation because the youth was questioning everything. So I felt as if by portraying the different events that took place and reliving them through the people who were there during that year, it was also a lens through which to look at the whole decade. Because everyone's stories, of course, began, you know, earlier in the decade. So I interviewed 100 people who were involved in different parts of the movement, you know, especially anti-war. I focused mostly on the draft in Vietnam and the impact that that had on everybody, as well as the feminist movement, which was just coming into the second wave feminist movement at that time, and Black Power, the Black Panthers, were at their height during that period. The Weather Underground, the song that you played leading in, which is Bob Dylan's Homesick Blues, is that's where the Weathermen got their name from, one of the lyrics in that song. So it was a year that began with Woodstock in August of 69 and ended with a terrible bombing in August of 70 in the University of Wisconsin-Madison of the Sterling Hall, the Army math building that accidentally killed a young researcher and was seen by many people as the end of the anti-Vietnam War movement in many ways.
I'm speaking with Clara Bingham. We're talking about her book, Witness to the Revolution, and We don't usually take breaks, Clara, but during this time right now, we're in our membership drive, and we will be taking a few breaks during this interview. So right now, we are going to be joined by our friends Liz and Will to talk about supporting KABU and to talk about the fact that Clara's publisher has given us a few copies of Witness to the Revolution to give to listeners who pledge during this time. So please give us a call and let's go to Will and Liz.
Thank you, Kathleen. Good morning. My name is Liz, and I'm here with Will. Say good morning, Will.
Good morning, folks. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we are here. We are both volunteers here at KABU, and we are asking you to become members by picking up your phone and calling 877-500-5266. Become a member during this fall membership drive. And I should mention, for those of you who may not be aware, Kathleen, our longtime public affairs morning news director, is retiring in October, at the end of October. And so this is probably the last time you can show your support specifically for Kathleen and all the fine work that she's done over the last, gosh, Kathleen, how many years has it been? 30? Something like that?
I started as a volunteer in 1985.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, Kathleen's been here a really long time. And if you appreciate all of the work that she's done bringing you the amazing public affairs that we broadcast here on KABU, show your support right now for Kathleen, for KABU, for your community radio station at 877-500-5266.
That's right, Liz. Kathleen's done an amazing job here, and I've been working with her for a long time. I'm a volunteer on Tuesdays and Fridays, and I get a lot out of KABU. And I know you folks out there listening right now do too. So let's repeat that number. I gotta say it eventually. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KABU. And you can get a copy of the Clara Bingham book for only a $75 donation. You can spread that donation out over the year. And yeah, the book's available. It sounds fascinating. I think you'd make a great audio book. I'm visually impaired, so I'd love to be able to access this book. But KABU brings you so much, and I know that's why you're out there listening. I know you appreciate all the great shows, all the great music, and you can show your appreciation by picking up the phone and dialing 877-500-5266.
And when you do become a member at the $75 level, again, as Will mentioned, you can pick up a copy of Clara Bingham's book, Witness to the Revolution. And we're speaking with Claire right now. We're going to get back to her in just a moment. $75 breaks down to $6.25 per month. And you can become a sustaining member at that monthly amount. Our volunteer phone answerers are waiting to take your call and explain just how simple and easy it is to become a sustaining member of KABU. 877-500-5266. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz and Will. And again, back to Clara Bingham here on Political Perspectives, author of Witness to the Revolution. Clara, you were talking about the fact that you interviewed over 100 people. How did you decide who to interview?
Well, Kathleen, I started with the chronology, and I went through all of the main events that occurred during that year, and they are kind of remarkable. I'll just list a few of them. Woodstock, the epiphany that Dan Ellsberg had later in August when he was at a peace conference and when he decided he was going to try to release the Pentagon Papers, the moratorium, which was in October the largest ever protest against the war, the Days of Rage, which was the Weathermen's first sort of big protest. And then My Lai was revealed in November. The second moratorium was in November. Nixon gave his silent majority speech in November. In December, Fred Hampton was shot or really assassinated by the Chicago police with the help of the FBI. There were sort of seminal big events. In March, the Weathermen accidentally exploded a bomb in a townhouse in the West Village, killing three of them, decimating the house. In May, Nixon announced that we were invading Cambodia, and four students were killed at Kent State in a protest 4 days later, Jackson State 10 days later. And then there was the largest student strike in American history in May, ending in August with with the bombing that I mentioned. So I looked at all of those events and then zeroed in on them and tried to find people who were in the room, who were on the streets, who were involved actively in one or more of those events and tracked them down. I went all over the country interviewing all sorts of different fascinating people, many of whom still, their wounds were still fresh these 45 years later. And so interviews, for example, with Daniel Ellsberg, who was 83 when I talked to him a few years ago, he was still extremely emotional about how unjust the war, how frustrating it was to get Nixon and Kissinger to pull out, how many people had died, who shouldn't have. So that was really how, and I also wanted to have a cross section of culture and politics. And so I was also interested in different bands and who had released albums during that time. I talked to Stephen Stills, for example, because Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young during that year were extremely popular. And after the Kent State killings, they just within a week released the song Ohio. So they were really the bards in many ways of the younger generation at that time. So I wanted to give the reader a sense of how much was going on in so many different parts of the country and so many different worlds, culturally, politically, ethnically, in terms of gender, so that readers could get a sense of how really cataclysmic and life-changing the events of the late 60s were.
I like the fact that you interviewed and excerpted, I assume, because I can only imagine how much material you had to leave out of the book.
Oh, yeah.
But I like the fact that you had interviews with people who differed about what happened, how it happened, and about the meaning of what happened. And I mean, when you read it, you can hear the differences, say, between the perspectives of, say, anti-war activist David Harris and Mark Rudd and Bill Ayers, and also between women activists, say, between Bernadine Dorn and Robin Morgan. You can kind of get this sense of like, wow, there were some real differences of opinion going on here.
No, exactly. And of course, there was so much. I mean, that just reflects a small percentage of all of the internecine battles. There were a lot of ideological battles among the left, if you were left, far left or medium left or liberal or radical. And plus, I also tried to interview people I interviewed an FBI agent and a cop who worked at Madison in Wisconsin and members of the Nixon White House. So it was important to get the full, as much as possible, perspective,
right,
of the debate.
Right. And speaking of that, who was the fellow who had to listen in on his job? I guess he was an FBI agent.
Bill Dyson, yes.
Talk about him.
Well, he was fascinating, really fascinating. I went and visited him in Florida. He was in semi-retirement and had spent 10 years as the main case agent following the Weather Underground. And he started following them and listening in on their conversations just before the townhouse, which was in March of 1970. And then after that, they became fugitives. About 200 of them went underground and succeeded in bombing about 33 locations, not injuring anybody, and they were symbolic bombings. And Dyson was very frustrated, explained to me how frustrating it was for him and the rest of the FBI because they never solved any of those crimes, and it ended up being one of the biggest manhunts in the country. They couldn't catch the weathermen. But he, because he knew them so intimately from listening in on all of their conversations in so many different locations, knew them intimately, and really in many ways understood why they were doing what they were doing, and was also kind of curious because he wasn't as well educated as most of them. A lot of them had gone to Ivy League schools like Columbia or Michigan and Chicago, and were highly educated from elite families and were throwing it all away for, you know, for the movement. And so he was kind of fascinated by them as much as he was trying to catch them at the same time.
I got a little interference there.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. But we're going to take another quick break. You are listening to Political Perspectives. I'm Kathleen Stevenson. I'm speaking with Clara Bingham. We're talking about her book, Witness to the Revolution, and the work that she did to interview over 100 people and bring this oral history of the time of 1969 and 1970 to life from the people who were involved. And right now we're asking Will and Liz again to speak with us about the need to support KABU during this interview.
That's right. And it's a great pleasure to be here with Liz. I'm raising money for this terrific organization. And this book sounds fascinating. For only $75 donation, you can pledge your support to KABU and get a copy of this Clara Bingham book. It's a great deal. So pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KABU, and make this happen. Pledge your support, whatever you can afford, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever will fit into your budget, we can use here. We run on a shoestring budget, but we have to get bills paid, and we have to pay the vital stuff. So you can make it happen, and you can pledge your support and your love for KABU by dialing 877-500-5266. You can, of course, also go online. We're way modern and up to date. We have a computer website, and you can donate there. It's very simple and very easy and very discreet. And then also, you can come in here. We're 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, just off Burnside. It's easy to find us. There's a beautiful mural out front. Walk on in. You can donate some money or maybe just your time. That's what I do. I'm broke, so I donate my time to KABU. Isn't that right, Liz?
That's right. In fact, every voice that you hear on the air at KABU is of a volunteer member donating their time, and that includes Kathleen, who is current his paid staff, but her radio time is volunteer time. She's not paid for the time she's on the radio.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's true. And KABU is supported by, I believe, about 8.5 FTE paid staff, but over 500 volunteers. And we've been doing it that way since 1968, and that's 48 years, and we want to do it for another 48 years. And the way that we can do that is with your support. 877-500-5266 or online anywhere at Planet Earth, KBOO.FM. And as Will mentioned, we are giving a thank you gift during this hour, a copy of Clara Bingham's book, Witness to the Revolution, for a $75 minimum membership. This is a retail value of $30. So if you think about it that way, you're getting a $30 book and a $45 membership. I mean, that, you know, what a deal. You can't do better than that. And if you don't have $75 all in one lump sum, that's okay. You can become a sustaining monthly member for $6.25 a month, and that will equal out to $75 over the course of an entire year. If you've got a little more money to give, we would love to have you become a member at the $90 level for $7.50 per month, or a $120 per month, a per year membership for $10 per month. Another way to make your membership amount and pledge amount more meaningful is if you make an hourly wage to pledge your hourly wage per month. So if you're making $15 an hour, how about a $15 per month membership? Think about ways in which KABU has enriched your life, has brought you news and perspectives and opinions from people that you will never hear anywhere else in the media spectrum, either online or on over the airwaves of whether it's television or radio. Think about the unique programming that KABU brings you and has brought you for the last 48 years. We know that you value that programming because you're listening to us right now. So now's the time. Pick up that phone, 877-500-5266. Will?
That's right. It is an amazing organization where people are truly dedicated and they care about the quality of the content and the importance of the content. I mean, as Liz pointed out, where else are you going to find these voices? Where else are you going to hear these fascinating interviews except KABU? And I've lived in many other cities and I've traveled around a lot. all over the world. And KBOO is one of the very few radio stations that isn't out there to raise money. It doesn't have a corporate sponsor. I mean, KBOO is truly grassroots and part of the community. And so are you. And so you can make that happen. You can facilitate this great organization moving forward by picking up the phone and dialing 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO.
That's right. I'd like to thank some folks who have already called in. Thank you to Anne in Portland, who's renewing her membership. She is a longtime listener. Thanks also to Russell, renewing in Happy Valley. Joe, renewing in Corvallis. Let's hear it for Corvallis. Yay! Woo-hoo. And Chris, renewing for McMinnville. Let's hear it for McMinnville. Woo-hoo. Hey, I'd like to get some calls from folks up in Vancouver and Longview and Rainier and St. Helens. How about all of you folks listening to us?
And Eugene.
And Eugene. And yeah, yeah. And Hood River. How about them? 877-500-5266. That number one more time. 877-500-5266. Or go online to kboo.fm. Thank you.
And thank you to Liz and Will. And we're back with Clara Bingham on the line talking about her book, Witness to the Revolution. Clara, you have as you mentioned earlier, the book is organized around many of these events that happened during the time period that you cover. But there's one chapter that's called December, and you say it's a month dominated by violence and despair. That would be December of 1969. Can you talk about the events of that month and the mood of that month and what made it so bleak?
It was very bleak that month, absolutely. One of the most pivotal and tragic events that occurred then was the assassination of a young Black Panther, 21-year-old Black Panther leader named Fred Hampton in Chicago. He espoused an early version of the Rainbow Coalition. And was an eloquent speaker and wanted to, bring progressives and radicals from all different parts of the movement together. And J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI, considered him to be, very threatening. And Hoover, which no one knew at the time, had targeted the Black Panther Party and considered them the number one domestic threat to the security of the country, and had tasked 2,000 FBI agents to go undercover and try to disrupt and eliminate the Panther Party and other parts of the left movement, but particularly the Panthers. And Hampton was his bodyguard, was also a undercover FBI agent, and slipped him a sleeping pill at dinner, and so he was asleep with his pregnant wife, and their house was stormed by a group of Chicago policemen, and he was shot in cold blood in his sleep, along with his colleague Mark Clark. So it was a really later determined to be a cold-blooded assassination. At the time, the Chicago police said that it was a shootout and that they were defending themselves, which was really not true. But what happened is, with the death of Fred Hampton, is the Weather Underground, who were an offshoot of the Students for Democratic Society, SDS, decided to become more militant because of this. And so they felt that the white movement needed to show solidarity and with the Black part of the movement. And so they decided to start bombing different locations. And right after Fred Hampton was killed, they bombed some Chicago police cars. And then, of course, that escalated after that. But so it had a huge impact. It radicalized a lot of people and made people really feel that they were at war with the government, which many of them really were. You know, the other thing that happened in December was Altamont, which was a concert in California that was supposed to be very much like Woodstock, but it wasn't. It turned very dark. The Hells Angels were the security, and they ended up killing a young black man who was armed in the middle of the concert. And there must have been bad acid there. There were a lot of bad trips, and people, it was just had a very bad vibe to it. And people who I interviewed who were there felt like it was this moment that really showed the dark side to the counterculture, and the and that in some ways it was heralded the end of the 60s. So it was Christmas time, but people who were against the war were still so frustrated that it had been, Nixon had been in office for about a year by December, and he had run on his campaign saying that he was going to end the war, that he had a secret plan to end the war. And so he was given a pass for the first few months after he came into office. But by December, it became clear to most people that Nixon was more interested in escalating the war than ending it. And, you know, later we learned that he was bombing Cambodia secretly. And so even though he began bringing some of the soldiers home starting in around December, in fact, he really was escalating the war. And so the anti-war movement became, you know, very disillusioned. There was just a lot of frustration.
And it's interesting, you have two that I read in the chapter on December, civil rights activist Julius Lester and Black Panther Wesley Brown, they reacted differently. They said Julius Lester said it's interesting the different reactions of whites and of those of us who were in SNCC, and what we had, the reactions to the murder of Fred Hampton. So they reacted a little differently.
Yeah, Julius Lester, I mean, I could read you a little bit of what he said to me. It was very interesting because not all, you know, black civil rights and black power activists were members of the Panther Party and agreed with the Panthers. And Lester was very much not in the Panther camp, and he felt that he told me our response was very different than the response of SDS, of the white left. The other deaths of the Panthers were senseless as far as we were concerned. You don't challenge white policemen with guns. They're eager to kill you. So he felt that there was a sort of suicidal, almost self-destructive aspect to the Panthers' rhetoric. And then he thought that really hurt the movement in a lot of ways. And Wesley Brown, who I interviewed, who was also a Black Panther member at the time, realized that he didn't want to go down that road, that it was, you know, quote, you know, revolutionary suicide. And so he dropped out of the Panthers soon after Hampton was killed.
I'm speaking with Clara Bingham about her book, An Oral History, looking at 1969, 1970, Witness to the Revolution is what it's called. It's available for you as a thank you gift with your membership to KABU if you join us at a level of at least $75 a year. And I wanted to talk about the women's movement in the context of this book. Reading the chapter on women's liberation and just remembering the voice of Robin Morgan, I just found it really powerful. And it's interesting to me, her words and the words of the other women, particularly laying out the sexism that they were encountering in the anti-war movement at the time. And she wrote a very powerful piece called Goodbye to All That, which was just scathing. Can you talk a little bit about her perspective and the perspective of women that you interviewed for this book?
Yeah, Robin Morgan is one of my favorite characters in the book for me, because she can tell a story so well. She's a writer and a poet, and is famous. She was in the anti-war movement, in the civil rights movement, and then in 1970, as so many women did at that time, broke away from those movements that were very much male dominated, and started her own women's rights, women's lib group. And she wrote, she and a group of her compatriots in January of 1970 took over a magazine and under the Rat Subterranean News, which was a popular underground newspaper in New York City. And she and her friends were female, you know, feminists were frustrated by how misogynistic the tone was of Rat, and so they barged in, they took the keys, they kicked all the guys out, and they wrote their own issue. And in that issue, Robin wrote something called "Goodbye to All That," which I reprint in the book, and it is a absolutely hilariously funny and very angry in articulate screed against the white and black male left and their hypocrisy. You know, that here we are fighting for freedom and not acknowledging that women are, you know, deserve a piece of that. And another historian and SDS member, Michael Kazin, who I interviewed, told me that "Goodbye to All That" became as widely known as any document by a woman radical since the 1848 Declaration of Seneca Falls. And he, of course, as so many, you know, men who I interviewed felt, was absolutely cowed by "Goodbye to All That" and very much cowed by the feminist movement then. And they all had to sort of restructure how they felt about women. And so Morgan talks about how she said to me, "We are tired of rolling their joints and grinding their coffee and, you know, mimeographing their memos. We wanted to be out front. We wanted to be leaders. We wanted women's rights also to mean to be human rights, to be something that was worthy of fighting for." And so the second wave feminist movement was born. And she was involved in a group called Witch, and they staged a lot of quite funny guerrilla theater. They went to the Miss America contest in Atlantic City in September of 1968 and had a bunch of different events there, but they had the Freedom Trash Can, where they threw in bras and hair dryers and irons and things that were symbols of, you know, American women being domesticated. And this is actually an interesting moment because some people believed that they were actually burning their bras and putting them in the trash can, which I discovered is not true. And the feminists weren't ever really burning the bras, and that was apocryphal, but never one of those mistakes that never got corrected.
Right, right. And, you know, there's so many issues within this book that it's hard to pick what to kind of focus on. One of the, as we get into the year of 1970 and we go through the moratorium, the Vietnam moratorium and various things that happened. And then there was Kent State, and you have a really interesting chapter on Kent State with a lot of voices of people who remembered that. What in that period of time do you think is really important to bring out?
Well, I mean, Kent State was such an incredibly powerfully radicalizing event for so many people. To have the government shooting down white college students really felt like the ultimate betrayal. And it turned many, many, many people who were on the fence against the war, against Nixon. It was very polarizing as well. I interviewed eight people who were there, two who were shot, had been shot, and one was paralyzed for the rest of his life, Dean Kaler. And I interviewed the photographer who took the very famous Pulitzer Prize-winning photograph of Marianne Vecchio leaning over the body of Jeffrey Miller and screaming. And, you know, his experience was really quite, you know, amazing and horrifying, and everyone remembered everything that happened because it was so traumatic. So that chapter is something that I really, you know, now looking back, kind of cherish, because I feel like it encapsulates so many parts of the 60s that are so important. For example, it's so important to understand how polarized the country was. And Dean Kaler told me that when he was in the hospital fighting for his life, he received hate mail. And people who said, "I wish the Ohio National Guard had had better aim. You should have died." And it's hard to imagine that now, you know, that would have been the reaction by some people, but it really was. And actually, just after Kent State, on May 9th, there were a group of people who were protesting what had happened there, and Mayor Lindsay in New York City had lowered all the flags to half-mast to honor the dead at Kent State. And so a group of young hippie activists were down in Wall Street and were attacked by a group of hard hat construction workers waving American flags. And it was a bloodletting. The cops just stood by and watched as these kids were all, you know, beaten up, you know, over a dozen were hospitalized. And it was really another example of how polarized the country was. So I feel like Kent State was an important moment, because you either were one at that stage, you were on one side, or you were on the other.
I'm speaking with Clara Bingham. We're talking about her recent book, the book Witness to the Revolution, Radicals, Resistors, Vets, Hippies, and the Year America Lost Its Mind and Found Its Soul. We're going to welcome again Liz and Will to talk about supporting KABU and making that call to us right now to support what we do here in the morning and all day long, 24 hours a day here on KABU. And Will and Liz?
Thanks, Kathleen. That's right. You can become a member of KABU by calling 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. I wanted to say, as somebody who was an infant during this time, I was born in 1967, I'm finding all of this history really fascinating, because it happened while I was alive, but I was too young to be aware of all of the things that were happening and how they were going to shape my life. And so I feel like I'm getting holes filled in my own life story, in a way, in the history of my time. So I want to thank both Clara and Kathleen for this incredible interview. And if you find this interview as fascinating as I do, and you value the kind of programming like this interview that brings voices that you're not going to hear on mainstream media, and perspectives and stories that you're also not ever going to hear on mainstream media, then pick up the phone right now and show your support for the kind of unique public affairs programming that only KABU can offer you. 877-500-5266. Will?
That's right. It's really important that you grab the phone. I mean, you can hear behind me, somebody already has. It's 877-500-5266. And free speech is really important, but it does come at a price. And the price can be only $5 a month or $10 a month, whatever you can afford. But it's important you support this organization. You know that. That's why you're listening. And we all here know that too. And that's why we're volunteering.
Sorry about that. Was I interrupting? Were you?
No. I was okay. Just babbling away.
Just checking. So I also wanted to mention once again that we are giving away a copy of Clara Bingham's Witness to the Revolution, the book that she's discussing this hour, for a $75 minimum membership. $75 works out to $6.25 per month if you become a sustaining member of KABU. And it's really easy. All you need to do is pick up that phone, 877 877- 500-5266. Our phone answerers are waiting and eager and willing to take your call and walk you through the easy, safe, secure process of becoming a sustaining member of KBOO. 877-500-5266.
That's right. And the eagerness here is palpable. We are so looking forward to hearing from you when you pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266. And you are helping keep on the air so many vital voices, so many important speakers, so much information that we can't find anywhere else.
Once more time, 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. Let's get back to the interview.
Thank you, Liz, and thank you, Will. Again, speaking with Clara Bingham about her book, Witness to the Revolution. And I was thinking when Liz was talking there, Clara, that she was mentioning that she was an infant during this time and she felt like the book helped fill in gaps. I do have to say that I lived through this time, and I've also, as a person working here at this alternative radio station, we have covered many of these issues, but still the book filled in gaps for me with just to read these different people's perspectives from, the original words. It was very informative and kind of added a whole layer to my understanding of the time. So I wanted to thank you for that.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Were you involved in the feminist movement, Kathleen?
I was. Yes, I was.
Do you have a consciousness-raising group?
I went to a few consciousness-raising groups. And I also was involved a little bit with what came to be called the Janes in Chicago in 19.
Oh, wow.
But, I did that while I was a student for a short period of time. So, yeah.
Can we talk about the Janes? Because I write about them. I'm not sure.
Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
And that was something, I think it's important for young feminists or just young women to understand, that the issue that the Janes, I knew nothing about them when I started doing the book and was just fascinated to learn. Then please correct me, because I'm sure you'll know way more than I do, of course, but it was an underground abortion
It changed network. Over time, yeah. A network of when I was with it, we helped people get abortions. We didn't do the abortions later. The collective, as I understand it, helped provide abortions themselves. But when I was working with it, we didn't.
Right. So that was earlier on.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating to see, I talked to Marjorie Tabankin, who was an activist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she was sort of one of the agents there for Jane. And the word would just go out that she knew how to help women get safe abortions, and they would raise money to get them, on a bus up to Chicago, where doctors who were clearly extremely brave and courageous would perform safe abortions. Because it's the statistics that I could dig up showed that during that time, before abortion was made legal nationally in 1973 after Roe v. Wade, up to 5,000 women a year were dying from illegal botched abortions. And that's very hard for women to really fathom now, to fathom how important it was, something like Jane was, to so many women's lives, and that you were really saving lives.
And
ultimately,
well, on that note of hope and which I do want to get into a little bit now before we take another break, and then at the very end of the interview, what kinds of hopeful things did you get out of this work that you did to do these interviews and put this book together?
I really felt that what inspired me about everyone that I talked to was how committed they were to trying to make the world a better place according to whatever their beliefs were, and how active they were, how politically active, socially active, and Someone called, you know, that generation, your generation, the awakened generation. And that was something that I really gravitated to and was inspired by, how people felt in their teens, you know, as really, really young people in high school and college and just after college, that they had a responsibility to try to either stop the war, save women's lives who were, you know, couldn't get legal abortions, try to make life better for African Americans in the ghetto, try to force the Nixon administration to tell the truth. There were so many people who really put their lives on the line. And I got a lot of hope and inspiration from that. And, you know, a lot of that's coming back now as issues that people really care about are starting to bubble to the surface. And so it's the activism of that time that I wanted to bring alive again and to remind, you know, younger people who were not there how important it was and how much change took place and therefore how much people can do to make change.
And we're going to maybe talk a little more about that in just a few minutes. But right now we're welcoming back Liz and Will to help us round out this hour and hopefully get some more calls of support for political perspectives here on KBOO and maybe give away more copies of Clara's very interesting book, Witness to the Revolution. Will and Liz?
That's right. And you can pick up a copy of that book by calling 877-500-5266. And for a $75 minimum membership, that book can be yours. And you don't have to pay the $75 all at once. You can do it monthly, which comes out to just $6.25 per month. 877-500-5266. Will?
That's right. And that donation that you make, that pledge of support, is so important because we don't have underwriters like Bechtel or Halliburton to support us. We're not sponsored by the Ford Foundation. This is a grassroots community radio station. It's here for you and it's here for all the other people in this community. And so when you donate your money, you pledge your support, you're making something truly great, something that's really the heartbeat of Portland. And you keep it on the air and keeping all these wonderful programs going. There's fantastic music, music you won't hear anywhere else played on this station. And trust me, I listen to a lot of audio. And there's so much that KBOO offers to people. And all you need to do is pledge $6.25 a month. That's affordable. It's really very affordable. So pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO and make it happen.
That's right. Or go online anywhere on planet Earth, KBOO.FM. There is a way to become a member that way, and it is safe and totally secure. And our phone answerers are just chomping at the bit, waiting to take your call and walk you through all of the different ways that you can become a member and all of the different opportunities that your membership brings you. You know, we say that KBOO is a community radio station, and it is. It is not only run by members of the Portland community. As I mentioned earlier, we function with the help of over 500 volunteers and about 8.5 full-time paid staff, but we are community-supported radio. So while you're listening to us right now, you are our listening community. Take the next step and become a supporting member of the community. You are the community in our community radio. 877-500-5266. I'd like to give a shout out and a thank you to some members of the community who have provided food for our volunteers today. Thank you to Bridges Restaurant at 2716 Northeast MLK, India House at 1038 Southwest Morrison, and Eat Pizza at 2037 Southwest Morrison. These restaurants are also part of the KBOO community. They're doing their part by feeding our tireless volunteers who are waiting to take your call. And now it's your turn. 877-500-5266.
That's right. But those businesses that's donated the food to keep us going, they understand the importance of KBOO, and so do you. It's so simple to keep this organization going and pledge your support. But if you don't have the money to pledge your support, then why not come down here for our volunteer orientation? I'll find out when that is, and I'll come back and tell you folks.
They're ongoing.
There's one every month, and it's an orientation that lasts a couple of hours, and then you can be part of KBOO. That's how I got started. That's how everybody here got started. And it's a great organization and truly an important part of Portland, Oregon. So pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO, and pledge your support today, because what you're doing is probably the most important thing you'll do today. Well, I know that's a little egotistical, I apologize, but you might do more important things today, like pick up your kids or do stuff, but you could also donate some money and keep this organization going. We've got to keep the lights on and the microphones working, and you enjoy hearing it through the receiver. So do whatever you can, a one-time single donation or a monthly supporting donation, whatever fits into your budget, we will receive gratefully and spend very wisely.
You know, we can't put a value on what KBOO means to you financially. Only you can do that. We can make suggestions. For example, a $7.50 per month membership comes to $90 per year. $10 per month is $120 per year. These are suggestions. These are guidelines. You decide. It's up to you. What value, financial value, do you place on this unique community resource that you cannot find anywhere else? How much is that worth to you in hard dollars and cents? Think about it, and then call us right now, 877-500-5266. We have a $400 goal for this hour, and we are still a little bit shy of that goal, and we've only got about 6 minutes left in the show, in the hour, and it would be terrific if we could make that goal, and we can do it with your help, but you need to call us right now, 877-500-5266. And remember, if you become a member at the $75 level, you can pick up a copy of Clara Bingham's book, Witness to the Revolution. We'd like to thank Alec renewing his membership in Corvallis, Carlton also renewing in North Portland, and Kathleen renewing in Southwest. Thank you to all of
who have
either become new or renewing members. Thank you to all of you who are going to call. And now's the time, 877-500-5266.
Thank you, Liz, and thank you, Will, for your help, and thanks to all the people who have called so far this membership drive. Please do keep us going here with your call of support. Clara Bingham, author of Witness to the Revolution, we just have a few minutes left. I wanted to mention the epilogue of the book, where a lot of people reflect on what they did and what it meant. And some people have regrets, some people don't. You end the book with Robin Morgan again, which I thought was great, where she says, if I could read this part, "I wouldn't go back to 1970 for anything in the world, but I wouldn't have not been in that year for anything in the world either, in that time, in that place, doing what I did with the people I was doing it with. It was a real gift." And how did you come to find the most of the people feeling about this now as they look back at all this time later?
Well, that was really fascinating to see. A lot of people had regrets. You know, it's important to remember for someone like me who wasn't there, not to romanticize the 60s, because it was also so dark, and there were so many really hard times, bad things that happened. But at the same time, as Robin Morgan mentioned, there was this incredible feeling of spirit and of people who were together, who made major change. And the people who were the most, who had the most remorse, and the sense I got generally was that the militant wing of the militant left wing, you know, many of the weathermen I interviewed, for example, regretted going as far as they did. And Mark Rudd in particular, who was one of the leaders of the student movement, the SDS in Columbia during the uprising in 68. Mark Rudd in particular was very articulate about how he felt that by, bombing, the bombing campaign that the Weathermen conducted actually hurt the movement, ultimately played into the hands of the Nixon administration. And so that strategically it was a mistake. So he had regrets about that, and that generally most of the people I interviewed believe that the political revolution lost. It never actually took hold at all, and that the cultural revolution won, and that the changes that have lasted were really much more social and cultural. And Mark Rudd in particular, I'll read you a little section of what he told me. He said, "I think the hippies have gotten no credit for having accomplished a lot. In fact, you say the word hippie and people laugh. It's like hippie and train wreck are somehow related. But actually, the new left was a train wreck because we lost bad. In essence, the new left forgot power. We thought the power was going to fall into place somehow automatically. We thought the liberals would take power and we would be to the left of them, but that's not what happened. What happened was a far-right reaction took place." So essentially, that really was very much the verdict of different people I talked to. Peter Coyote, who was a major countercultural figure and leader and started several communes and was based in the San Francisco Bay Area, told me, "I think it's fair to say that we lost all our political struggles in the 60s. We didn't end capitalism. We didn't end imperialism. We didn't end racism. We didn't actually end the war in Vietnam. However, we did win all the cultural battles."
And we're going to have to end it right there, Clara. I really appreciate that quote from Peter Coyote. It's really good. Thank you so much for that. We're just out of time. And I want to thank you, Clara Bingham, for being here this hour and talking about your book. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Kathleen.
Yeah.
Good luck with your drive.
Thank you very much. And again, that was Witness to the Revolution, a book by Clara Bingham here on Political Perspectives on KBOO Portland. Please call in to support us and please stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
Mixing up the medicine, I'm on the pavement looking about the government, a man in a trench coat badge out late off.
Okay, you are tuned to KBOO Portland, and coming up next it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, and then stay tuned at 10:15 on Flashpoints, Native activist Tom Goldtooth on the Dakota access struggle. And also we air excerpts of the documentary film by Greg Palast, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And at 11 o'clock, stay tuned for The Dirt Bag, where host Glenn Andreessen will talk about storing apples and pears and planting cover crops. All that coming up on KBOO this morning. And we go now to Air Cascadia with Chris Andre.